Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Conn and delighted to be joined by Record Sports Craig Swan and Michael Gannon. Guys, how are you both?
Yep, good, thank you.
Good afternoon, chaps. Nice sunny bank holiday Monday, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. It's a lovely day outside.
Right, chuck it down as always. Every bank holiday, isn't it? It's always the same.
What's a bank holiday?
Well, that's the bank's on holiday.
Well, I should say, happy coronation weekend because... Of course, for everyone else in the UK, that refers to King Charles. But for Celtic fans, the Scottish champions were crowned again this weekend. Celtic, 2 years in a row, 11 out of 12. We'll talk about the game, obviously, in a moment. But an amazing achievement, Mick, for, you know, Ange Postecoglou and his players.
It really is. I mean, nearly a year ago, Postecoglou was on the pitch at Parkhead and he was addressing the fans and he kind of vowed that they're going to come back better and stronger the following year. And listen, that sounded like a lofty kind of promise because last year it was a kind of unlikely, remarkable triumph. But they have come back this year and they have been better, they have been stronger. This year has been so impressive. I mean, the league was won weeks and months ago, but they've been utterly relentless from the start. They're now on course to break points records. Even if they don't get there, it's still been a remarkable season. They've been utterly dominant. And listen, the last couple of weeks, they've kind of... Have they stumbled towards the line? They've maybe not been quite at their free-flowing best, but if you look back at the periods of the season where they did the real damage, they were absolutely outstanding. They blew teams away, and they've been utterly dominant. It's fairly deserved. But 4 games to spare, it's been done with a bit of room as well. Very impressive.
And you sense, Swanee, that after the, you know, during the celebrations after the game yesterday, and I thought he was a bit more emotional than he normally is. I think even it kind of hit home for him. There's obviously the treble of being his sights now, but getting that second league over the line, you could see that it meant so much to him.
Yeah, I think that there was possibly expectation on this season that wasn't maybe there last year. Now, of course, Ange Postecoglou will have put pressure on himself, and at no point when he took over the job did he ever say, I need time, I need transfer windows. He said, I need success and I need it now. But last year was such a kind of whirlwind, the way they fought back when nobody gave them a chance and they won it. It was all kind of euphoric, whereas it almost felt yesterday as if there had been a lot of pressure on this season. And to be able, as Michael says, to, you know, I don't think it was such a big thing to win it this year as it was last year, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But the way they've won it this year, the standard that they've set, they did actually improve on last season. I think Postecoglou was probably taking all that in on Sunday, just the sheer level of achievement and the heights that the team have hit this season. It's been incredible what they've done. As I say, to actually win it was probably more of a surprise that his team won it last season, but to then win it in the manner that they did it this season was probably even more impressive. So you can understand them taking all that in.
We'll come back obviously to the title celebrations and what it means and what have you, but talk about the game obviously itself first. Mick, a lot of talking points from this one. I actually thought Hearts and the first half in particular played quite well, pushed Celtic quite hard. What did you think of the Cochrane red card to start off with? Did you think it was a red card or was a yellow enough?
I don't get the fuss. It's a red card. It's a red card every day of the week. I genuinely do not understand why there's any debate about it. The ball goes over the top. Atati is through and goal. The defenders are nowhere near him. he can either put the ball in the back of it himself or square it to Kyogo. And he's clapped. Listen, the boy, I don't think he meant it. But if you look at the replays, Cochran right away knows he's in deep, deep trouble. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be surprised to see a yellow card at first. So, VAR, is that a clear obvious error? Yeah, it's a red card. Listen, it's harsh, but in the way that the game is now, that's a red card. And I don't quite understand some of the outcry against it. I mean, listen, if you're a Hearts fan and a Hearts player, a Hearts manager team, you feel a bit hard done by. They played so well. I think you did them the service. I thought Hearts were excellent for half an hour yesterday.
Right.
But I don't think I've seen Celtic rattle like that all season. The way they had, the way they pressed, they harassed. Listen, they could not do that for 90 minutes. I mean, you actually saw it. The 10 minutes before the goal, before the card, sorry, you see the intensity dropping. I think Hearts were blown. I think they put in a lot to that first half an hour. Severely rattled Celtic. And then they started to tail off. So I think the game was heading a different direction anyway. The red card just expedited that process. But I don't get the fuss around the incident itself. I think it was a red card. Sore one for Hearts, yes, but definitely red. And I still think the game is heading that direction anyway, regardless of the card.
Did you see it the same way, Swanee?
Ed, Michael and I sat next to each other at the game. And when Maida was clipped and the yellow card came out, we both kind of looked at each other and went, ooh, might have got away with one there.
Yeah.
He might have got away with one because... The way we had a different angle in the stadium from what you have on the television. We were on the other side, and what I could see was quite a basic square pass in for Kyogo to finish. I thought, oh, he's, you know, even if he can't shoot himself, that's a goal-scoring opportunity because he passed Kyogo in to finish. So I wasn't surprised that it was referred. Again, agree with Mick in terms of the game. This is something we're starting to see more and more now. It was evident in the Viaplay Cup final and the Scottish Cup semi-final when Rangers really got after Celtic in the first stages of the game. And Celtic have just learned this way of kind of soaking it up, seeing it through, sizing it up, almost let teams blow themselves out. And then once it gets to the 30, 35 minute mark, they've kind of sized up the situation, start passing away into the game, start to get a foothold. Like Michael, I felt as though they were just starting to get a foothold in the game when the red card came. And the red card. The other thing I would say is that it's noticeable that teams, if you look at the way, there was a lot of discussion of Rangers attacking players almost being negated because they've all got jobs to stop Celtic playing. And you looked at Hearts yesterday and their top scorer, Lauren Shanklin, was basically kind of half detailed to look after Callum McGregor when Celtic got the ball, chase him back and sit on Callum McGregor. Teams, in order to stay with Celtic early in games, are almost negating their own attacking options. And Celtic can see that. They know that. So the chances of the other team scoring is lessened. And as long as they just grow into the game, they're going to eventually get their own chances and pick them off. It's becoming more and more of a theme I've noticed in the past 4 to 6 weeks.
See, yeah, I still thought Hearts, and listen, they didn't really have a shot on target. I mean, the one from Shanklin on the header was actually offside. They're actually a shot on target, which kind of defeats the argument we're making here. But I actually thought for half an hour, I mean, there were some frantic clearances from Celtic, hoofing the ball with their own bar and all that stuff. And at one point, Celtic actually slowed the game down. I think it was Matt O'Reilly. He booked him off, and he thought it took a moment to take time, calm the game down. And that's the first time we've seen Celtic doing that, really, like calming a game down. Usually Celtic are the ones that are held for leather, get the ball back in play, rushing through, trying to catch teams off guard. So that just shows you that Hearts were quite effective in doing it.
What they're starting to do now, Michael, is take the sting out of teams when they're blowing themselves out, and then Celtic play at their tempo.
Yeah.
When they get in charge of the game. Because by that time, the opposition's starting to get out on their feet, and then Celtic start playing it quickly.
Yeah, but also, listen, I also think Celtic weren't at their best, and I still think...
They're not at their best, I don't deny that.
I think the last few weeks Celtic have... I mean, I think Ange Postecoglou mentioned it himself, they've tightened up a wee bit, because the finishing line approach is, it's only natural to tighten up a bit, and I think some of the kind of free flow and stuff that they played all season with the hand break off, I think it does become that's just that wee element of doubt. They take the safe pass rather than the kind of Hollywood ball. They don't pass the ball to the guy with two guys at their back, but they do the hell in the season. They take the safer option, and that's it's only natural, and it's taken a wee bit away from Celtic in recent weeks as things get tightened up. But it just shows you the quality they have, that even in those instances, they still will get the job done with a bit of room to spare.
See, just Swanee, you mentioned Callum McGregor there, and again, I thought he was outstanding yesterday. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. I know he's kind of famed for the way he controls games and the way he reads games, but see the way he carried the ball at times yesterday? Absolutely brilliant, the way he went by players. And just on that as well, so, so having this debate with my mate at the weekend, right? Engine aside, right? I think Rio Tati could play for almost any team in Europe. I know it's a massive shout, but his touch, the way he controls the ball, he's so good. Absolutely brilliant.
I think you could say the same about Callum McGregor to me.
Aye, McGregor's every bit as good. Aye.
I did say in my match report for the game that there was a point yesterday, just at the point that Michael was talking about. I can't remember exactly what minute it was. Somebody, no doubt, listening will know. But Callum McGregor got the ball at the edge of the box. He almost went 50, 60 yards, carried it all the way up the touchline. It was almost like the moment I broke the spell. From that moment, it kind of was like, okay, right, everything's fine here in terms of Celtic. You know, it was almost like a moment that just relieved a few things. You know, he was riding tackles and all the way up the touchline. And he's just got good players and leaders just do things. Scott Brown used to do it differently. Scott Brown would career through somebody, or, you know, he would do something, or he would scream at a teammate or just do something to get the team rousted. And McGregor kind of does it by example in a slightly different way. He'll do something, he'll carry the ball, he'll just do something that the rest of the team kind of look at him and go, right, okay, this is what needs to happen. Now he's different class. In terms of Hatate, I think we would all agree he's not back up to speed yet after being out with that 6 weeks with the injury. The last two games we've seen him, but there's no doubt the touch and the quality, and he got stronger as the game went on yesterday. And again, he's got that one thing that midfield players, the really top midfield players, have: timing of run. Yeah. I mean, everybody said Callum McGregor put Rio Hatate through yesterday. Callum McGregor didn't put Rio Hatate through. Rio Hatate ran through, and it was the fact that Callum McGregor spotted it and picked a pass. No run, no pass. There's no pass on. Hatate's away before McGregor sees it. And good midfield players these days can just do that. Midfield players that get beyond front players are worth their weight in gold. If you mix that in with touch and technique and ability to finish yourself, it's a pretty potent combination.
And elsewhere in the game, I feel like I should touch on Kobayashi, Mick. I thought came in and did well. He looks like a very able deputy to Carter Vickers.
I think he's looked good at times. I think he'd that first half an hour.
15 minutes, Mike.
At one point, he attempted header and he hit it off his own knee and it caused chaos. I think he had a bit of a culture shock at that point. But he settled down and he played. I think you can see he's strengthening the ball at his feet, isn't he? He's great at bringing the ball out and stepping into the hole. He's definitely like a modern centre half. But I think these are experiences. I think that will do him really good. I mean, I mentioned before his debut against St Mirren when Curtis May was pretty ragdoll him, and he got through it. And I think this is another one. I think for all that first 20 minutes for a bit here and scaring for him, I think it will stand him in good stead. I think it'll be absolutely invaluable. He's definitely a player, isn't he? I mean, he's really cool. I mean, even after that wee spell, I mean, he's still cool on the ball, still demanding it, still taking it in tight areas and passing the ball out. Which is certainly needed at the back. Listen, he's not going to be Carter Vickers. Carter Vickers was one of the standout players of the season, one of the best players in the country. But in terms of one for the future, he looks a right goodbye, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And I should say as well, Swanee, that after the Barkas kind of farce, I thought another clean sheet for Joe Hart yesterday, 100 games for Celtic. It's been an inspired bit of business because his career was going nowhere in England.
He's been brilliant. He's just such a calming influence, and it's quite different. It's interesting, actually. Obviously, people mature with age, and they change the way they are. But there was often this sort of caricature of Joe Hart when he was down south. He was eccentric and loud, and you know, jumping about and brash, a bit like Jordan Pickford might be just now. But he's been the polar opposite since he's been at Celtic. Obviously, experiences through the years, and he's just so calm. Just gives off such a cabin. Don't get me wrong, those Celtic fans are in utter panic sometimes when he's passing the ball around about his own 6 yard line, or you know, he's taking chances, but that's what he's told to do, and he's done it since he's come. There's been one or two that have gone wrong. I think it was one in Leipzig went wrong, there's maybe another couple, but in general, that's the way Celtic play, and he just exudes total calm when he does it. He just looks very authoritative. And I think the other thing is you can tell just with the way that other players respond around him that he's a real power in the dressing room alongside your Callum McGregors and Greg Taylors, guys like that, he really seems to be one of the real leaders in there that, that the younger players can look up to. And why would you not, given the fact he's 36 and a lot of these boys in here are in their early to mid-20s, why would you not look at someone like Joe Hart and the players he's played with and the levels he's played at? He's been a brilliant signing. There's been so many of the signings in the Ange Postecoglou era that you could go through and say, incredible bit of business, incredible bit of business. And Joe Hart would have to be right up there as well.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I know I feel like I've talked about it a couple of times on the podcast, but I feel like I have to just round off yesterday by bringing it up. Mick, I've got no idea how you could differentiate between, you know, Kyogo, McGregor, Carter Vickers for player of the year. I mean, for the guys voting, good luck, because I've got no idea who you choose.
No, I tend to agree with you. I think it's a difficult one. I mean, it's hard to see past. I mean, Kyogo, 30 goals for the season. I think that's 50 goals in 76 games for Celtic. I mean, outstanding. I mean, the wee fella is just, I mean, he hardly touched the ball sometimes. I think he had 9 touches of the game yesterday. And one of them is the key moment, the key breakthrough, that run. I mean, Hearts, how many times is he going to do that against Hearts, that same goal? That attack in the front post and score. And the goal scorers always get the awards. I mean, personally, I mean, touch on it before, I think Cal McGregor's the best player in the country. So for me, I think he is the player of the year. He missed a chunk of the season, which might go against him in terms of the vote. But in terms of an all-round football player and influence, the full package, I think it's hard to see past McGregor as a best player in the country. But there's arguments for all of them. Hatate, again, I've touched on it again. He's outstanding, a real driving force. Carter Vickers is another one. I don't think you can give a defender the player of the year when they score 105 goals so far. I think that'd be some cheap giving it to a centre half. It's a tricky one. See, I think McGregor would be the one I would look to as the best, but I don't think anybody would have any complaints if it was Kyogo or Hatate. Maybe even Jota. Look at Jota's influence in that team as well. He seems to have kind of, I'm not saying under the radar, but he's not quite the headlines as much in recent months, but he's been terrific as well. He's got some great goals, important assists. And listen, even a case, I think for somebody like Dyson Maeda, a guy who's always there, he's always playing, and he's so effective. I think he's a little bit kind of...
almost the best player, Greg Taylor.
Greg Taylor's another one.
He's not a flair player, but honestly, Greg Taylor, I think he's one of the ones that they miss more than anybody in the team, and I don't mean that against Alessandro Bernabei. I just mean the way the team functions, the amount of goals Greg Taylor gets with that pass inside for Maeda. They play so well when he's in it. He's such a good player. I really think he never gets mentioned in these things. Listen, hand on heart, is he going to get player of the year ahead of Kyogo and Carter Vickers? Probably not. Of course, he probably shouldn't. But I just feel like he deserves to be mentioned in these things because he never gets mentioned. And I think he's become absolutely priceless to that Celtic team.
It sums up to one. Actually, we were talking to him. I was talking to him, interviewing him the other week. And I said to him, I said, oh, you've been named as a potential player of the year. And he went, have I? He actually was quite surprised to even hear himself be listed in that. It just shows you a humble attitude. But he had been absolutely terrific. And I think his manager would say the same thing. He is one of the first names in the team sheet now, isn't he?
Absolutely. 100%. I just feel like Celtic can do without Alistair Johnson. They've got Tony Ralston. They can do without Kobayashi. They can do without Hatate. They've got Aaron Moy. They can do without Maeda. They've got Abada. They can do without Jota. They've got James Forrest. Not really sure they can do without Greg Taylor to the same levels.
I don't know if you've noticed it, Sean, as well. I think with Greg Taylor as well, he's matured so much in this last kind of 18 months, 2 years as well. And we kind of joke about how often he does the kind of media duties. And it's the reason why he gets put out to do these things. He's such a safe pair of hands. He's really mature. I think he learned a lot from Callum McGregor. Yeah. And he is, I mean, he's still a young lad, Greg Taylor, but he does, I think you mentioned it earlier on, he has been made as a kind of real key figure in that dressing room. A real calm influence, confident, well-spoken, gritty little player who knows his role now and he's comfortable in his role. And I think I've been really impressed with him on and off the pitch this season.
Obviously, he deserves a big shout-out, but Swanee, you wouldn't have him as your out-and-out player of the year, would you? If
I put I did say that. On heart, do I think he would get it ahead of a Kyogo or something? No, I don't think he would, and I'm not sure he would deserve to, because Kyogo's 30 goals have been since April, and I, like Michael, believe Callum McGregor is the best player in the country, and probably we may see in a few years' time that Hatate becomes better than that, but right now, in terms of influence on a team, I think Callum McGregor still has the biggest influence on the team, so... On the team overall, so I would have it between Kyogo and Callum McGregor. But the only reason I brought it up was I just felt that all these names get mentioned, and Greg Taylor never gets mentioned; he constantly gets overlooked.
No, I think it's a great shout, definitely. Obviously, after the game yesterday, we saw the celebrations outside Celtic Park, and I know we've got the Scottish Cup final to come, but inevitably, fans and punters will be looking ahead towards next season and looking at the summer and what have you. I mean, Mick, if you're Ange, how do you look at it? I mean, there's going to be all speculation around him in the summer as well. But you get the feeling of him that he's already plotting next season, how he's going to approach it.
Without a doubt. Listen, we know what the next hurdle for him is. It's going to be Europe. It's how do they get to that next level in Europe? And he knows that as well. I think Celtic were half decent in the Champions League this year. I don't think they were poor. I think the results, they were unfortunate. They could easily have been sitting on 5-6 points after the group stages. And I know that's not exactly lofty heights, but at that level now, the competition is so heavily weighed in the favour of the bigger teams. It's tough. But the days of finishing the top two in Champions League are going to be so difficult to get to that stage. But competing in these games and getting to maybe compete for a second spot and get that third spot to get into the Europa League after Christmas, that's success. I think that's got to be his target. I think he's got to get European football after Christmas next year by finishing either third or maybe even competing for second in the group stages. Listen, it's not easy. I mean, we kind of demand this of teams from Scotland to go and compete at that level. But when the reality is financially, I mean, Celtic and Rangers have got budgets of the bottom of the Premier League, top of the Championship. And you wouldn't have expected Burnley to go and compete the Champions League. I mean, you just wouldn't. And that's the reality. The demands are there without the kind of financial backing. So he's got to make it work. I think that's his next challenge. He's trying to find a way to take a scalp, to beat the better teams. He's shown they can beat teams that are on a par and can inferior, no problem at all. It's going and going competing against a better team and seeing how they go. So that's the big challenge. How he gets there, I don't know. You look at that squad and you think, where does he buy? I mean, who did he replace? You think, well, it's tough because, I mean, don't think there's much. I mean, what kind of money is going to take it cost to upgrade some of these guys? But I think there will be departures in the summer. I think regardless of how it's looking, I think there will be teams that come in for certain players. I don't think Postecoglou is too worried, really. I think he's just confident in his own ability to recruit. I don't think he's going to be having sleepless nights about losing a player or two. So I think it's going to be interesting summer in both directions.
So on, he'll look at that Rangers team getting to the final last season and think his Celtic team are every bit as capable of matching those exploits in Europe.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. If Rangers could get to the final and Celtic were better than in the league, then it stands to reason that they should be able to do it. So it was interesting last year in the Europa League. I mean, Celtic never said it, but all the vibe you felt all around the Bodo Glimt tie was the league was all that really mattered in getting to the Champions League the following season. I'm not suggesting for a second they didn't try against Bodo Glimt, but just never felt there was the edge in those games. I think even for a lot of the supporters, they almost kind of just passed it over. It was a comprehensive defeat in aggregate. Not what you were expecting. I know Bodo Glimt had been great. taking the scalp of Roma and stuff like that. But he would have been looking for better than that, I would have thought. So I don't know. I'm with Michael. It's just such a tough gap to bridge. You know, Celtic playing teams like Real Madrid last season, this season, obviously. I'll count the World Cup, pre-World Cup period is almost like last season, feels so long ago. Trying to get results off teams like Real Madrid and things like that, very difficult. I mean, even, I think when Celtic played Leipzig, we're sitting at the game and Leipzig's front line was something like 120 million quid or something like that. And I know you can't count it just on transfer fees, but that's the level of player that they're up against. You know, very, very difficult. I don't know. I'm like Michael, I don't know how he does it. It's such a tough job. The one thing he's got in his favour is, and he has said, he's got a young, improving team. They're all going to have a year's more experience under their belt. They've had the experience of playing in the Champions League. So hopefully that will stand them in good stead when they go in there. But it's unbelievably difficult. And I think we saw, I don't think the age group of the team was exactly the same. But I think, Brent, if I've got this right, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty certain when Brendan Rodgers' team first went in there, they did well. You know, they emerged with a lot of credit for the first season in the Champions League. They then went back the next season and almost regressed. It just gets harder every year, the Champions League.
No.
And they didn't do as well the next year. And then it was kind of the pats in the head kind of dry up a wee bit. And then becomes, well, why are you struggling for results?
I think it goes without saying you need like a lot of good luck, you know, a bit of good fortune in the draw and what have you. But I think that's what separates Ange at the minute from being a real kid.
I don't think Celtic had a devastatingly bad draw last season. You think Leipzig were not the elite of the pot that they were in. Shakhtar Donetsk, the same. You know, I think you could make an argument that probably Rangers got a tougher group.
Oh, I'd agree with that.
So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, there was a lot worse with that. I remember at the time of the draw, looking at it and thinking, that could have been worse. Certainly I've got a chance here. Because as always, you get lost. Reality gets lost. You just, that can happen. And then, as I say, you then start to go through the squads. I think what had happened is, had Rangers not got a result against Leipzig in the Europa League the year before, something like that, people are kind of saying, oh, you know, they're beatable and this and that. But it's just so tough. It's just so difficult.
Yeah, I think there's slightly a chance missed. I think Shakhtar Donetsk in their circumstances, I mean, they're a good side. But in the circumstances at that time, Celtic should have beat them away from home. Celtic were so dominant that night, missed so many chances. That was a big one.
Yeah.
You get that result, I think they finished third, and I think that is a good achievement in that group.
Yeah.
Competing, Leipzig are a good side as well. I mean, I know the Rangers thing the year before, but they're a very good team. So I think if they got third, I mean, that's a successful campaign. Not getting that result out there, which put pressure on the home game, which then reflected, obviously, badly eventually. I think a chance missed. But in that environment, it's so unforgiving. I mean, Celtic missed a lot of chances. I mean, Real Madrid, two sitters against Real Madrid and nothing each, didn't they?
Nice.
What if? What, you know what? Real Madrid, it doesn't matter. I mean, I've seen teams do that in the past. Real Madrid give teams a two-goal start, come back and win 4-5. So,
we're not 2 goals behind Manchester City, getting any extra time or something. Injury time is still put them out.
That's what
Real Madrid do.
Yeah. So yeah, at that level, you're really are struggling. But I think that's it'd be interesting to see how he approaches it next year, because I still think they'll need to change the way they play, and I think they will change the way they play. I think the signing of Iwata is really interesting because he looks like a top operator, Tomoki Iwata. But at the moment, the way they play, I don't see how he fits in the team really. I mean, I think certainly played him and McGregor further forward. It takes a wee bit away from the team. In terms of McGregor and the guys in attacking areas, I think he's naturally a more kind of defensive player. I think you might see a change in formation in Europe next year. I think this is going to be, I think that's why he signed him. I think it's sort of a view to Europe. And I think you won't quite see the kind of all guns blazing approach that we saw this season. Because I think Ange will evolve and he'll learn from this year. I think about a whole new kind of game plan for Europe, which will be really interesting. Because it might go against his own natural tendencies. But listen, I've said before, I don't quite buy this mythology about Ange being a swashbuckler and all gung-ho kind of manager. He knows how to manage a game. I've saw it in the recent games against Rangers at Hampden, at Celtic Park as well. He knows how to manage a game, but now we'll find out how to manage a game at the real top level. He's got a taste of it now. we'll find it next year, how he adapts to it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we've got this, Mick, I've definitely got your take on this in the pod before, so I wonder what your thoughts on this are, Swanee. Am I really naive, right, to think that not just Ange, but maybe Kyogo and Hatate as well, am I naive to think that they wouldn't necessarily go to a lower Premier League side? That maybe if you were talking about Arsenal comes in, that's very hard to turn down. But I honestly think if, you know, a Burnley, a Sheffield United, a Palace come in for Ange, I like to think he'd know, you know, that staying with Celtic would be the better move.
I don't think it's naive. I mean, I think each case is different on its own merits. You know, each individual person has different goals and different things that they want to achieve. You have, you know, you have certain people have connections to England or certain places. Like, for instance, there was always a realistic chance Brendan Rodgers was going to go back to England. Steven Gerrard, when he was at Rangers, being from England, was always going to be pulled to the English Premier League. You look at Ange Postecoglou, you don't know, do you? My hunch is probably not. I don't think he would go to one of the lower ones, but only Ange Postecoglou knows that. I certainly look at the players. I mean, Kyogo's 28 now.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's almost found home now, playing at the highest level in European football and having the adulation of the Celtic fans. You look at someone like Rio Hatate, I'm not sure they would go to lower places in England. I think there's bigger places for these boys to go to. But you have to take it on each individual case. Just the three you've mentioned, I'm not sure going to a lower level would float their boat when they're at the elite of Europe to play against and all that brings with it. But only these guys will know.
I think Ange will still be there next season, Mick. Do you agree? Not to put you in the spot.
You know what?
You just can't answer your own question, Daniel. Depends on who wants him.
I know. I think you stay, but I just feel like when I talk to friends and other people, they say, nah, Premier League, it's too big a carrot, money. But I don't know. He's an older guy, Ange, in managerial terms, and I think he realises that how big a club Celtic is. I think that's what I mean to say.
I just think, look at the amount of jobs that have come in England this year. I mean, there's things like 14 jobs that came round in English this year, some twice and three times. You look at the likes of Brighton, Southampton, Leeds, Leicester, Crystal Palace. I mean, and then you go to Everton, Spurs. I mean, forgetting about, I think Chelsea and all that stuff are maybe a bit elite too far. I don't know the way their model is. So he's not going to any of those jobs. I mean, listen, his name has been in the frame for pretty much all of them at some point or whatever. So you wonder where the call's coming from. Unfortunately, English people don't rate being in Scotland. Mm-hmm. They just don't. So if you're a...
That's total snobbery, Matt.
Totally. Listen, quite why,
you know, Chelsea would go to Brighton for Graham Potter before they would go to Celtic for Ange Postecoglou defeats me.
Totally.
But that's what they do.
But you know for a fact, the names of the these days, some of the time you leave at Spurs and all that, and they say, listen, this guy's got a lot of buzz about him. He knows what he's doing. He's won titles in Australia, Japan, and Scotland. And unfortunately, those three lump together, and they're like, well, gamble. It's a gamble. Those countries aren't Spain, they aren't Germany, they aren't Italy, they aren't France. Whether I like it or not, that's, I think, is it harsh on the guy himself? Without a doubt, he's been successful everywhere he's been, including his national team. But that's the snobbery. English football.
And by the way, Michael, and those that have gone before him.
Totally. Listen, Neil Lennon.
Neil Lennon got Bolton. Brendan Rodgers, even, who'd almost won a title at Liverpool,
mm-hmm.
had to go for, I'm being disrespectful to Leicester, but, you know, there was big jobs kicking about and no one really gave him a sniff, and he was winning treble after treble at Celtic.
Yeah.
He's almost like they'd forgotten what he'd done at Liverpool. It didn't matter.
If Postecoglou was going to conquer England as such, I think he might have to go to the upper end of the Championship. a team that's really forward thinking and give them the full reins and take them into the Premier League. I think his route in the Premier League is through the Championship, I think. And then it's a question of would they do that? You look at his age.
Not a chance.
No,
not think so. I don't think that. I don't think he would do that.
I don't think so either. But if I'm plotting if you're plotting your career, I think that's maybe your only route into the Premier League. If you're not getting Leeds, if you're not getting Southampton, you're not getting Brighton, you're not getting Palace, you're not getting Everton when they're going down the dumps, you're not getting these jobs, you're not getting Spurs, you're not getting Chelsea, you're not getting Man City.
The one thing we can't be sure of, Michael, is if these clubs didn't ask.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
They may well all ask and be told nope.
It's a fair point. But then you look at the guys they went to, Swanee. Ask Roy Hodgson, Everton, Sean Dyche, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Leeds, Sam Allardyce. I mean, look at the guys.
You wonder if they ask.
You look at the guys they go to when they're in trouble. Do you know? I think if the phone call comes in March for one of these teams, I think you're right to go, now you're all right. It's a different story if it comes in the summer. If an Everton come in the summer when they're selling the Premier League, that's a big question. They're a big club. For Leeds, same situation. That's a different kind of question. In February, March, April, forget it. Yeah, I get that.
Because we know from our colleagues in the south that Leicester were interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, before they made their appointment, and they got the vibe was that they were just giving short shrift that wouldn't be happening.
Yeah,
at that stage of the season, so that was the message is what we got from down south, from around about that area. So it was never a non-starter for them because they were just told it's not happening. So you wonder who else asked the question.
True, but you also know
it's not just be a case that they didn't fancy him.
No, but it's also the case he's a manager who's lived out his suitcase for most of his career. He has been willing to travel and go and take jobs and all that stuff. So, I don't know where the phone call comes from, and I don't see him jumping at any old job.
I've just got to put my hands up and say I don't have a clue.
No,
not a clue.
I think I'm exactly the same because you just don't know. And as a manager, you have to strike while you're hot. I mean, because there's plenty of times as a manager the phone won't ring at all. So sometimes if you're hot, you need to go. So it just depends. The money and up and down in England is so vast. You couldn't judge anyone to take that chance, unless he's a guy who believes in himself.
I was going to say, Michael, I don't even think it's his car. I think it's just you're listening to Ange Postecoglou. I was there at the press conference when he got unveiled, and there was no at Celtic, and there wasn't any. We were quite within our rights to ask him questions about, you know, your 25 points of a deficit to make up, and the squad's in a state, and guys that want to leave, like Odds and Edward, and he just basically said, as long as this team plays the way I want to play, they'll be successful. I mean, it's like just good managers just believe that.
Yeah.
All managers just believe they can just go in and do anything anywhere. They just believe. So if you were to say, be a 14th place team in the English Premier League or something, Ange Postecoglou would believe he would have them in Europe by the end of that season and in the Champions League by the season after. That's just how he thinks.
That's
not my opinion, it's just listening to him speak.
Yeah. Well, he heard it yesterday. He was asked yesterday, someone said to him, could you imagine being this person when you first came into the club and that first result with Hearts back in July 2021? And he looked at him as if he'd nicked one of his chips from his plate. He's like, yeah, I did, mate. He's like, yeah, I did. He got the mate treatment. He goes, yeah, I did. He's like, I fully expected to be sitting here with two titles. And
it's not arrogance. I just believe in what I do. And that's what he would be exactly the same no matter who calls him.
Yeah, yeah. But it will be interesting. I don't think anyone can say for sure he's definitely going to be at Celtic for the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. He might well be. But likewise, it depends on the phone call in the summer. It might make things interesting. So we'll have to wait and see. I think
it's all about show business, you say, Michael. It's all show business.
I think Celtic fans understand that as well. I think if a decent club came in, I mean, in the summer, and he went, I think they'd be absolutely devastated at him going now. But I don't think there'd be the same outcry there was when Brendan Rodgers left
at
the end of the season. I think everyone understands that the marketplace the way it is. That if an Everton or Leeds are one interesting clubs in England, even like a Brentford and all that stuff, these interesting clubs that are doing things differently. I mean, if they did make that call, I mean, it might be an upward one. But I don't think they'd be grudged a move. It'd devastating to be for Pointers. So they'd be wailing in the streets and all that stuff if they did leave. But they wouldn't be the same backlash as there was for Brendan.
And I think that's the same for players as well, Michael.
Yeah.
I think if anyone got a good offer and went, I think they would go well. The blessing of all the supporters for what they've done for the team. I don't think anybody would begrudge anybody a move, to be perfectly honest with you.
It depends what they go. I think a few punters, I mean, you look at Jackie Mack, he's going to the MLS and you think, wait a minute, what are you doing that for and all that stuff? And maybe even, it was just slightly misguided. Berlin, they're an ambitious team themselves, tracking the Champions League. So that nose is raised at that kind of stuff. So it depends where they went. But if it's a decent club, a decent level, I don't think anybody would be grumbling too much or grudging them too much. But
I'll give you Jackie Marcus, but I'm not sure I've gone to the Bundesliga.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think that was misguided. I think a few people thought that Union Berlin aren't one of the big guns, but at the moment they're going to be. I mean, they're ambitious. They're trying to push for Champions League. So I think that's what I mean. The impression was that why is they going to Union Berlin? It's not Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund or these teams. It's Union Berlin, but they are going to be.
Of course, as you have to remember, when Josip Juranovic signed for Celtic, Celtic weren't even the big gun in Scotland.
No, this is true.
So you have to be prepared to believe in what you're signing into, as he did.
Yeah.
And rewards.
Well, very interesting, someone in general, I think. Because I think they'll be interesting players and manager.
And just to finish, guys, it feels like the season's winding down, but we've got another derby next week. And talking about Ange, I think he's the type of character that will want to go there and really ram home his dominance, or his side's dominance.
I find this whole thing fascinating, Daniel, at the end of the season, because, it's been a long season. Guys have played a lot of games. Guys have missed games with injury. The temptation has to be to leave guys out, maybe give some guys a rest. But we've all seen it before with teams when, you come off the gas and it's very hard to turn it back on again. And I know just about everybody will say, it's Inverness, it's a Championship team, they'll get the job done. But Celtic don't think like that. That's not the way they are. I could be totally wrong with this. I'm not sure records and points records and goal records and that, I'm not sure that big a deal. In terms of, it's more important to win, that we keep going because it's more important to get the treble done and win that trophy and go down in history doing that as winning the treble, as opposed to breaking records. So I don't think he would have any concerns about leaving out players in terms of points totals and things like that, but just in terms of losing flow before the final, because it's a balancing act. There's a lot of guys disappearing to go and play international football when the season's finished. What's the date for the Scotland games, Michael? 17th and 20th of June? The international calendar's almost running to the end of June. Celtic do have this great bonus that they don't have the qualifiers that were the sceptre of so many summers, having to come back and fight your way through Champions League qualifiers. They don't have it this season, they don't have it next season. That is a bonus, but guys are not going to get much time off in the summer, so it's interesting how they play it. But, excuse me, in my heart of hearts, I think they'll probably play strongest team all the way through. But
I agree with that. He'll play strongest team next week at Ibrox, Mick, won't he?
He will. But listen, they'll talk it up and they're talking about going all guns blazing. But I think it's only natural. They've put so much into this season, and I've seen it in recent weeks. They've put in so much to get to this point. It's hard to get back up the mountain again when they know there's not really the demand for it now. So I think it's going to be difficult to produce. I mean, we've seen it in years past. Once the title was in the bag, I've seen it in these derby games as well, that it's a wee bit flatter. Not by kind of design, just by human nature. They're not quite the same intensity. I think the one last year, towards the end, didn't really have the same intensity. That was different. It was still relatively alive, kind of, wasn't it, at that point? But
I think probably the most recent example for Celtic, Michael, you can correct me if I've got this wrong, Daniel, but I think a Neil Lennon team went to Ibrox, didn't they, when they'd already won the title?
Mm-hmm.
And they were just so flat.
Remember Ollie Burke up front and stuff like that? And plenty
I think
of
that was the game.
that went.
And they were trying, of course they were trying, but it just felt like it didn't really matter for Celtic. But everybody listening to this podcast will be going bonkers. It's an Old Firm game, and of course it matters. But I think Michael's right. It's just it's inevitable. And you see it in every league in the world.
I think
the team gets over the line, it's hard.
I think you're right. Neil Lennon's team lost at Ibrox after that title, didn't they? The year that Rodgers had left.
Yeah, that's the one.
And I think even during that period, in the Rodgers period, I think there was an Old Firm game as well, wasn't it? It was a kind of low key one, a draw or something like that as well. So it does happen. Especially, I mean, I'm looking back through the years. I mean, Martin Neil's teams that were a few of the titles, the one that were won by a mile. And after they won the title, there was a wee bit of a drop off, and they dropped a few points here and there. I think they lost their long unbeaten run to Dundee, was it?
They lost at home. I think Brendan Rodgers' team that lost on Trophy Day to Aberdeen.
Aye, that's a good aye. It was 1-0, aye.
Yeah. I think Martin O'Neill's team might have lost on Trophy Day to Dunfermline. There's been all sorts of crazy results at the end of the season, so
And that's the reason why these record totals are really hard. I mean, especially when you get to close like it is now. To keep going, it's all right saying, I think the first year under Rodgers, the invincible season, I think he did incentivise them so much to get that record unbeaten. That was driving them. The unbeaten thing was driving them on towards it, even after the title was wrapped up, long after the title was wrapped up. It was all about remaining unbeaten, wasn't it? It's never been done before.
I might be talking utter rubbish. Postecoglou might be exactly the same for this points total.
It might well be.
To go down as the greatest, you know, that might never be surpassed. It might never be surpassed.
Remember, when Rodgers came out afterwards and he said that he'd set 7 goals for his team that season, and one of them was 100 points, one was 100 goals, one of them was for the whole season, the treble, the other one. I can't remember, there were 7, I think we only found out 6 of them. They all got 1 draw all season until I think got to Rangers in the March. They dropped points against Partick in Ross County towards the end of the season. So even then, they managed to keep it, say, invincible, but they still took the foot off a wee bit, purely because of human nature. So it does make it hard for them. I'm sort of like saying they want to go out and put a statement out, hammer home or dominance, and all this, Rangers in their own patch and all this kind of stuff. Rangers have got a lot to play for as well. They are down and wounded. They're getting dogs abuse from their own punters and all that stuff. They're going to come out all guns blazing, try and salvage some kind of pride. So it's a difficult one this weekend. It's all right saying, they're going to go and do this, that, next thing. It's another thing going doing it.
Well, whatever happens next week, we'll be back with another Record Celtic podcast. I should say, Craig, Michael, as always, it's always a pleasure.
No worries, guys. Enjoy some of the rain.
Thanks, guys. And I should say, thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.